feel like Kobe in a fourth quarter.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts. And tonight we're going to do a pod about a win. I just counted. It's only been 10 episodes since the Timberwolves last won a game. And tonight they did. 96-88 over the San Antonio Spurs on the back end of a back-to-back. D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley will be the focus of tonight's show as they combine to score 51 of the Wolves' 96 points tonight. We'll also talk a little bit about how the return of Josh Okogie sort of tipped Ryan Saunders' hand as to what the rotation and just who's going to be playing is going forward now that Kat is back in the fold. But the place I'm going to start with tonight is with D'Angelo Russell and what he had to say post-game. And these post-game media sessions have just, they've been wild thus far this year. It's very bizarre. From Kat, you know, sadly, talking about after the first game, how his soul has died after the passing of his mother, then to just Malik Beasley on a lighter note, dressing like a different version of the Monopoly Man every night for his little Zoom media availabilities. And then there was Kat last night talking about, you know, basically playing a game with an amputated left hand. I don't even know what he was saying last night. But tonight was also a little bit more serious, and it was with D'Angelo Russell. And I thought he stood out tonight because he was asked for a public comment on what happened at the Capitol last Wednesday. And he turned the question on those of us in the media, asking him those questions. And I guess to set the scene a little bit, I don't know, maybe you've seen on Twitter or whatever that this happened, but it was at the end of D'Angelo had already been talking for like 10 minutes about the game. And when he was asked about this, he turned it on us and he asked us each individually to share how those events on Wednesday made us feel. And he went through one by one from John Krasinski to me, to Britt Robson, to Jace Frederick, and to Chris Hine. And he asked us each to share. I'm not going to play each of our answers because it was seriously like 20 minutes. But I have been tagged a lot on Twitter. So I guess the full version video of this is up on the Timberwolves YouTube page. If you care what us media people have to say, but I am going to play tonight the end of Chris's answer and into D'Angelo's response to all of us, followed by his feelings on the topic. So here you go.
Just a sad culmination of 160 years of divide in this country, whether it be along racial lines, economic lines. It was a really, really sad gut-punching kind of moment for me to see personally.
Respect that. Hey, I appreciate y'all discussing that with me, but I'm just gonna keep it short with my opinion on it. Well, for one, I feel like it was we let that happen, you know, as a country, as a you know, higher power or whatever you want to say, we let that happen. It brought eyes to, you know, the balance of the unfairness of, you know, what we're living in this country. It just brought more eyes to it. I will say that with all this going on, it's triggered a lot of attention towards, you know, just this topic in general. And it's allowing us to sit back and think on how we're gonna respond to it as a nation, one, as an individual, as a teacher, anything you do, your voice don't matter, because a lot of young kids nowadays aren't, they probably won't see this, they probably don't understand what's going on, but it is a revolution, it is a change, it is something that, you know, I feel like it only can go up from here, you know, being able to recognize what's right and what's wrong in these situations, and then seeing how people are taking advantage of the wrong thing to do. Like, it's just simple, like, there's right and there's wrong. Know why be wrong when everybody's watching? Why say the wrong thing when everybody's listening? You know, and this topic is so touchy. I can go on for hours. I can go on for however long about it, but the fact that we're bringing attention and, you know, and a lot of people are being educated on this topic that aren't educated, the fact that some of you guys are embarrassed, I think that's the right step, you know, in the right direction to, you know, keep seeing change and keep, you know, bringing awareness to these topics. So it's not nothing, it's not a lot we can do, you know, besides what we can do, and just bring awareness is all we can do at this point. So I appreciate you guys' opinions, and I appreciate y'all knowledge to it too. You know, y'all not naive to what's really going on. So I appreciate y'all.
I don't play that out of any sort of, you know, personal political motivation, and really, I don't think D'Angelo's answer is all that political. I play it because I feel that it is my job to not only talk about the basketball that is taking place, but to cover the team. And, well, it's my podcast. And I feel that covering the team is about covering the players as individuals, not just individual basketball players, though that's a big part of it, but as individual people. And honestly, in my opinion, understanding a basketball player is just as much about understanding them as a person as it is about what they're good at on the floor. We tend to lean a lot on what they are on the floor because that's more knowable, right? Like, we get to watch that. There's a million stats out there that tell us what is happening on the floor. As people, they're not knowable in that same way. And, you know, my perception, honestly, has shifted on this a little bit since I've now been on the media side for a while and having some insight into who these people are as people. And in that you learn, you know, from a bunch of different guys over there. There's been a lot of Timberwolves on the roster since I've been covering the team, and you do get to learn a little bit about their personalities. And at the end of the day, I think that matters because this is a team sport. And because it's a team sport, personalities do play a role. So my hope is that what D'Angelo Russell had to say tonight was not only heard, but also gave you a little insight into who D'Angelo is. And then even more so, I would hope that how he approached this can be a learning lesson for all of us too. I think this is a good sign that there's a lot of power in listening. You know, people like to be heard. So hearing them out is often one of the best tactics to take when trying to get that person to listen to you. And I thought D'Angelo did that tonight, and it was cool to be a part of. So before we move on to real basketball, let's take a quick break, and then we'll talk about what these dudes did as basketball players tonight. Hey everyone, want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take their podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive cover art for your pod, Q&As with Blue Wire podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks that we all use. On top of that, we'll get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, all those listening platforms. And what I can tell you from my own experience is it costs more than $15 a month to host your own podcast. Blue Wire Hustle only charges that, which is the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box to find out more. That's bwhustle.com/join. All right, let's start the basketball tonight by acknowledging what D'Angelo Russell was able to do for this team and how he was sort of able to unlock them, I felt, tonight. Russell, as I said before, had 27 points. He tacked on 5 boards, 5 assists, while making 4 of his 7 three-point attempts. But for me, where I thought he unlocked the Wolves tonight was in the fourth quarter. And for those of you who have been listening, you know, I've been talking a lot in recent shows that the time where it's broken down for the Wolves in the games that they've actually been in their few winnable games, if you want to call it that, has been in sort of the first 5 minutes of the fourth quarters. You know, both of those games against Denver had really strong third quarters where, you know, Russell and the starters had a big third and they pushed it into the fourth by, or entering the fourth with a lead. And then what happened to the fourth? The second unit would cough up that lead and they dig a little bit of a hole that proved to be too big by the time, you know, the closers got in. So what I thought was interesting tonight was that Saunders tweaked it. And he tweaked it in the form of starting D'Lo at the beginning of the fourth and then just really riding him. You know, D'Lo carried the second unit next to Rubio and Edwards and Vanderbilt and Reed. And Russell played 10 of the 12 fourth quarter minutes. And in that quarter, he was the only guy on the team to make multiple shots. And if you watch that game, I don't think you can come to any other conclusion than that D'Angelo Russell won the game for the Wolves tonight. I asked Saunders kind of about just the fourth quarters in general, but I asked him post-game what he was able to find in this fourth quarter that he hadn't been able to find previously. And his answer was pretty much D'Angelo Russell.
Brian, the fourth quarter, particularly kind of the beginning of the fourth quarter, is where it seemed to kind of break down in a couple of those recent losses. What would you say was the thing that kind of unlocked you guys in the fourth quarter, maybe in your rotations tonight?
You know, I do think D'Lo and Ricky playing together a little bit right there. We were able to get more organized offensively. And I thought D'Lo had a really, really solid defensive fourth quarter, especially. I thought he did a number of things. You know, hey, we all make mistakes at times, but I thought he made a number of winning plays. I think that Jared Vanderbilt gave us a good lift and putting pressure on the rim offensively and then also protecting the rim defensively, that helped that group. We got to continue, you know, to be a team that, you know, can corral loose balls, 50-50 balls. But, you know, we had guys that, you know, were sick and tired of losing tonight.
You'd save your mental sanity kind of with those offensive rebounds at the end that you're still able to pull it off?
Yeah, I'm glad we had review.
So going off that, let's talk about the rotation big picture here and just who we think is going to play going forward. Obviously, it's been a bunch of different guys, whole different rotation mixes with these injuries, with Kat and Kogi injured. But with Kogi back tonight and Kat presumably in the mix going forward, the team's now at full strength. And I think Saunders' perception of who the 10 guys that should be playing when the team's at full strength has changed. I thought who he played tonight illustrated who is going to be in the 10-man rotation going forward. So these were the starters tonight. Ed Davis, Juancho Hernangómez, Jarrett Culver, Malik Beasley, and D'Angelo Russell. My assumption would be that Kat takes Ed Davis's place and that Davis is removed from the rotation altogether. Though, you know, shout out Ed Davis. He did have a really nice game tonight. Thought played really well against Marcus Aldridge. But I don't think he's going to play anymore. I would also assume that Josh Okogie goes back into the starting lineup that Jarrett Culver had been filling while Okogie was out, or now, you know, he was on a minutes restriction tonight. So once Okogie's off of that minutes restriction, I think he'll be back in with the starters. So the new starters would be Kat, Juancho, Okogie, Beasley, and Russell. And then with Culver back on the bench, I think the bench five will now be Naz Reid, Jared Vanderbilt, Jarrett Culver, Anthony Edwards, and Ricky Rubio. And I say that because it appears that Jake Lehman has been completely removed from the rotation. He only played 5 minutes on Saturday night in that first game against the Spurs, and then he didn't see the floor at all tonight. And judging from Saunders' post-game commentary, it sounded like Jared Vanderbilt has earned a permanent spot in the rotation. It was kind of he talked about Vanderbilt in less veiled language tonight, basically saying, you know, naming it that he was like, we weren't planning on playing Vanderbilt entering the season. He said there was a numbers crunch behind Naz and that there just wasn't really going to be opportunity for Vanderbilt. But he also said that Vando went out and took a spot by the way he's played. And tonight he played 19 minutes. And granted, Kat was out, but he still played 19 minutes kind of in a bench power forward role, which we hadn't seen as much. And I say power forward because 18 of his 19 minutes came next to Naz, and then he played for 1 minute as the center next to Juancho. What I'll be interested to track going forward is how many of Vanderbilt's minutes are next to Cat versus Nas. In the game that Cat did play, the first Spurs game, Vanderbilt played 3 of his 12 minutes next to Cat and the other 9 next to Nas. So, you know, just going off of those two, it seems like Saunders is targeting Nas and Vanderbilt together, and also targeting, you know, Cat and Wancho as the front court of the starters or that other group. We'll see how much they run Okogie at the 4 lineups that they kind of had going those first two games. I would assume that, you know, Vanderbilt kind of takes some of that in a way where Okogie was more in there by default. Like he was the power forward because he was guarding the power forward. And I still think you could, because that worked with Okogie. I think you can still do that where if they are playing Blake Griffin and you feel like Okogie is your best defender and he can guard him, like you can still do that. But generally speaking, I think the power forward minutes will be more so split between Hernan Gomez and Vanderbilt. So I wouldn't bet on Vanderbilt having a big role going forward necessarily, but I do think he's in the 10-man. And honestly, tonight would be the first time I would say that with confidence. And on the other side of it, you got to take guys out. If you're going to add Okogie and Cat to the mix, you're going to have a 10-man rotation. 2 guys got to come out. So I think Jake Layman is now on the outside looking in. And the same probably goes for Ed Davis. I want to finish tonight's show off by talking for a little bit about Malik Beasley. He had 24 tonight on 6 of 12 shooting from 2 and 3 of 6 shooting from 3. You stack those numbers on top of the 29 he had in the first game against the Spurs, where I didn't realize this until I was just going back to look. He shot 7 of 11 from 3 in the first game against the Spurs. So if you stack those two up, his averages over those two games were 26.5 points per game on 48% shooting from 2 and 59% shooting from 3. And that was 17 three-point attempts too. So it wasn't, I mean, I don't know if that qualifies for small sample size, but he shot 17 threes. And as I'm sitting here scrolling through Beasley's game log for the season, I guess it tells a little bit of a different story than what I feel, because, you know, Beasley did have a couple stinkers mixed in there, the Portland game and one of the LA games don't look good on the stat sheet. But I really do feel that Malik has been a stabilizing force for the Wolves this year, you know, in what has been an obviously otherwise discombobulated season. And as I was watching the game tonight, and he was just consistently getting the team buckets when they needed them. I really thought about the contract value, and you know, that there's a lot of people out there harping on the bad value of Malik Beasley on a 4-year, $60 million contract. And well, that doesn't look like a great take through 10 games. I mean, on the court, he looks like he's been worth every penny of $15 million a year. And, you know, if you're listening to this and that $15 million still sounds like a lot to you, I guess the other argument I can present is go scroll through the league. And a lot of the other guys making $15 million a year contracts, like that's a weird contract zone where it can get kind of dicey, right? It's a pretty big piece of the pie of the salary cap. And there's a lot of guys out there who are on contracts like that who really, you would say, are not worth it. And I guess my assertion tonight is that Beasley has shown that he's worth that piece of the pie. And remember, because Beasley's deal has a team option in the fourth year, that means the deal's functionally a 3-year, $43 million contract, which just paints a different picture, right? Like, and it's the reason it's 343 is because the way his contract is set up is it escalates by $1 million per season. So it's 3 years, $43 million, and then the Wolves have the choice of whether or not they want to pay him $17 million in that fourth year. And again, as we sit here right now, 10 games into the season, even though it's been a rough 10 for the team as a whole, that doesn't feel like a bad bet at all thus far. And just now ripping through some of his tracking data on Synergy, a lot of his numbers bear out there too, where, you know, offensively Beasley, it tells the story that Beasley's really been cooking this season. both in spot-up situations and as a pick-and-roll ball handler. For me personally, I had a lot more faith in the spot-up situations than I did the pick-and-roll stuff, but, you know, both have been good. In spot-up situations, which include catch-and-shoot shots, but also include drives off the catch, Beasley is averaging or generating 1.3 points per possession, which ranks 78th percentile in the league. And then in pick-and-roll situations, where Beasley either shoots, gets fouled, turns it over, or passes, he's generating 1.1 points per possession, which puts him in the 80th percentile amongst pick-and-roll ball handlers. Two pretty good numbers there. Now, defensively, Synergy grades him out as below average thus far this season, particularly struggling against defending pick-and-rolls. But I do think it's worth noting that it would be pretty impossible for any Timberwolf to have a good defensive points per possession rate this season. And I'm not saying Beasley gets a pass for that. Like, he obviously plays a piece in what has gone wrong on that end this season. But I do think, you know, that some of Malik's more egregious defensive errors have trimmed down as the year's kind of gone on. And then I also got to say, he deserves credit for the effort he's consistently bringing on that end. That has proven to be more valuable than I thought it would be. And, I mean, here's the deal. Like, Malik is a below-average defensive player. But there's, you know, there's a gradient there. He's also a defensive player who's being asked to play a defensive role that is of one of the best defensive players on a team. I mean, he's getting tough assignments while simultaneously being asked on the other side of the floor to be one of the main pieces that carries the offense. I mean, that's just a burden. That's a lot. And I think about it as we zoom out or think big picture, you know, two years down the road or whatever, of a Wolves team where Beasley doesn't have major defensive expectations. Now, will that ever happen on a roster where he shares the backcourt with D'Angelo Russell? I don't know. But through rose-colored glasses, you know, picturing Beasley playing next to three or four other really solid defensive players, you know, that might make him a hell of a overall player within that role. To wrap things up tonight, I do realize that I brushed over Anthony Edwards scoring 0 points tonight on 0 of 8 shooting with 3 turnovers. And that was somewhat intentional and not just for good vibes only after a win. I brushed over it because I'm actually recording with Will DeBerg tomorrow, who, for those who listen to my draft content, know Will was the guy who I previewed much of this draft class with this summer. And tomorrow we're going to do a full-on film review of not only Edwards, but also James Wiseman and LaMelo Ball. So with Will, I'll be highlighting what has stood out from Edwards' game thus far this season, you know, both on the plus side, because there's certainly been a lot to be excited about there. And then also acknowledging, you know, when it doesn't go well, why it doesn't go well. And then, yeah, I mean, it's going to be fun to talk about LaMelo and Wiseman too, because that LaMelo Ball game on Saturday was, yeah, sorry. Only good vibes. The Wolves actually won. They're 3-7. And that's actually not that bad if you look at the standings right now. We'll get into more of this tomorrow. I'll be back with Will. Until then, Wolves 96, Spurs 88. I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down.